The following program may not be suitable for all ages.
Recorded live from the secret underground lair of Crimson Cowl Comics and Collectibles, this is the Crimson Cowl Comic Club Podcast.
The following issues may contain spoilers.
If you're going to pick a fight with the king, you better make it a good one. I'm Anthony.
I'm Kirby.
And I'm Katie.
Welcome to issue number 292 of the Crimson Cowl Comic Club Podcast. Every time we record, we talk about comic books. We don't have any club discussions this week, but for upcoming club discussions, issue 12 of Once Upon a Time at the End of the World, which is available now. Then we have our Tales from the North, The Dungeon, the comic that is created by our friends David and David under Crimson Cowl Media. And then from DC Comics, the Ape Real Special, the one shot there, all about their monkey and ape characters over at DC Comics. And when we select future club discussions, that is through the previews catalogs, which we will be doing today. But the first segment is going to be weekly reviews. That's where we go back and forth, talk about the books that we've been reading, whether they're new, whether they're old. We're going to talk about them there. And then, as I mentioned, over in the news section, we will do, to catch up with the month here with a skipped week, we're going to do the Marvel catalogs, the DC catalog, and the giant independent previews catalog, independent publishers, the merchandise, the apparel, the collectibles, all of that stuff. So all of the February 2024 for April 2024 previews catalogs in the news. So that is going to be the agenda for today's club. And we're going to kick it off with the weekly review. So let's jump over to that segment right now. All right, for the weekly reviews, let's kick it off first with Kirby. What you got?
I have Ghost Machine introducing Rook. This is it's basically, it's laid out to introduce all the new characters from all genres that are coming up here that came from our original stories like a year and a half ago. But we have the Unnamed featuring Action Pack Geiger, Junkyard Joe, and Redcoat. We got the sprawling sci-fi saga of Rook, the family odysseys of the Rockefellers and their friends, and the horror universe on Hyde Street. It's a great, nice, thick. I don't think you'd ever have to know anything about the little bits and pieces we've got from the past. You could jump on this and start fresh with it. It also gives you somewhere in here that shows, I think that's it right there, shows you the timeline and all that, so that can get you caught up if you don't know anything about what they did in the past and stuff. But it starts out with the Unnamed story where we got an old guy just talking to his grandkids around a fire, and he's just telling them stories about the past and what's going on. They're asking him about the Glowing Man, which is really popular from the Geiger storyline, or Glowing Man and his two-headed wolf dog. And it gives you a nice introduction to them, a story about these characters, telling about their past, and letting you know enough information that you could easily start fresh. And then we get introduced to our Redcoat character, which he's an immortal that found out when he was back in the Civil War and got shot in the head. And all of a sudden, it talks about many different times he got killed over different times and how he woke up and people were taking pieces of his clothes off him, or he woke up buried in the earth, or all the different events that happened when he came back from being immortal. It gives you, each one of these stories will take each individual character and give you a beautiful layout, an introduction, gives you their history and stuff, gives you a nice little story about them. And it's just, that alone would get you caught up with everything that you need to know from the past without enjoying the stories that they've given us. Then we get this Rook Exodus. A struggling farmer from Earth was given a second chance on the planet Exodus. world humanity, including the winged scavengers who plagued his crops. Now called Rook, the farmer became one of the wardens, those who wear helmets capable of commanding an animal species. But when the world's engine failed, the power of the wardens fell into the wrong hands. Those who could afford to fled, forcing those left behind to choose between trying to escape this war-torn world before its destruction or fighting to save it. Our Rook character has the bird-style helmet. I'm guessing, assuming that he's mainly going to be able to control crows. He's hanging out with his pig buddy. He has a couple of pigs running along with him while they're dealing with a battle. And it was a fun and interesting. They're getting chased by a giant mountain lion of sorts or some type of panther. But it was really interesting introduction for me to him because I know nothing about this character yet. So I definitely want to know more about all these. The other characters that are going to be part of that world, their different helmets, what they deal with. And you can see it's kind of like a post-apocalyptic civilization, but they're on a different planet, but just has that feel to me. But yeah, I was really excited with that character. It's just, and again, you got your different characters with all their little story bits and pieces. Then we got into Family Odyssey. Knew nothing about this. It's Ghost Machines Family Universe. That they have a bunch of different characters that they're apparently going to be coming out with. And this is kind of unique. It's a kind of quirky family. It seems like a few of them have special powers, and we're going to find out more about them in the future. It's like one girl's obsessed with doing that string-like art. The other girl looks like she has some special witchy powers. We got an elderly lady that glows. I don't know if she's a ghost or not yet. And then her boyfriend or husband hangs out with her. They're just jamming out on a video game system and stuff in here. But they seem like really fun. It kind of leaves us all hanging. So I'm like, yeah, and I got to figure out where that's going. And then we get introduced to another group of characters called Hornsby and Hallow, but that's another just this basic looking family story that they're showing us, and it's basically Hornsby is like the devil character, Hallow is like a angel character, I'm guessing, because at one point we see a shadow for the boy and the girl. They're the main focus with the superpowers. Everybody else looks pretty normal. I don't know why my screen's doing it. I'm not moving at all. But he's got the angel under him, and she's got a demon-like image, a shadow under her. So I'm guessing it's going to be kind of like a heaven and hell style storyline, but they're friends, but they mess with each other with their superpowers. So they're playing a game of baseball, and I don't think anybody else or any of the other kids around them even know that they have powers or anything. They're still kind of hiding it. And then this one surprised me also, this Hyde Street. I'm like, okay, I'm thinking Jekyll and Hyde style storyline. And in this one, it's basically, and it starts out giving you these old school advertisements with the x-ray glasses. Then you see a kid reading a comic book, the unnamed comic book, and he's getting, I do not know why that my screen does that. It's weird. But it's something on Shelley's iPad. I'm not used to using it. But it's basically every town has a Hyde Street is what its concept is. And on Hyde Street, all kinds of supernatural things happen. So yeah, this was a really good introduction to all these characters and nice layout, because they've been playing around with a couple of other one shots that introduced us to mix up of the characters. But now I know a bunch of that I'd never knew we're coming out with this. It sounds like they're going to come out about midway through the year and into the fall. Those other ones, the Hornsby and stuff, and those family ones in Hyde Street. But I guess I'm going to be following every single one of them. I'm stuck with it. I love this whole franchise. So check it out. It's through Image Comics, and it's the Ghost Machine group, but lots of fun characters.
So that's from like the Geoff Johns Geiger world universe
Yep.
thing. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, you actually got quite a few people in this because you got Jason Fabok, Gary Frank, Brian Hitch, Geoff Johns, Lamont McGee, Francis Manacol, Brad Meltzer, Ivan Reis, Peter Schneisberg, Peter J. Thomas, and Metal Sichuk. But
Hard
half of them, I know their names. But so there's a good lineup of creators in this one. So I suggest it to anybody that's in that's that type of stuff, the strange and.
to. Cool. All right, let's jump over to Katie with another volume of a previous topic. What you got?
All right, this week I have Spy Family, Volume 10. It's by Story and Art is by Tatsuya Endo. Incidentally, I Googled it and apparently you don't pronounce the X. It's just there for aesthetics, but I kind of like it. Spy X Family. But wow, what an issue. So many positive things to talk about. So just as an overview, this is a story set in a fictional country. It honestly reminds me quite a bit of like East and West Germany, where the two sides are in kind of a cold war with each other, and they are of course spying on each other, which brings us to our main character, which is Lloyd Forger. He is a spy known as Twilight, and he is a spy for Westalis. His wife Yor is an assassin, and she is an assassin in the employ of Ostania. They have Bond Forger, their dog, and then their adopted daughter Anya, who is a first grader and a telepath. So, they did so many cool things in this book. It's almost hard to know how to break it down. So we get Lloyd's backstory from the time he was a little kid, and the war hasn't happened yet. We're right at the breakout of the war, and how that then sets out the rest of his life. And so his village gets destroyed. He thinks all his like friends from school ended up dying. And as a teenager, he basically lies about his age to get around the age requirements, and he signs up to go to war. He's fighting for his country because he feels like Ostania, they killed all his friends, and a story that has been, in fact, told many, many times in different ways and continues to hit in such an impactful way in this book. So we see him as a teenager and as a young man fighting. And then one day he's out on a mission and he runs into his old school friends, but now they're all grown up. And he's like, oh my gosh, I thought you guys were dead. Like, I never saw you again after that day. We had to leave town, everybody had to evacuate. And he gets very emotional reuniting with his friends. And of course, they Chekhov's gun us, where he's like, oh, I thought you were dead. And they're all like, oh no, not dead yet. And then they go on a mission, and then they end up dying for real this time. And Lloyd is totally, completely disillusioned, and is really staring down the void and contemplating, like, what is even the point of all of this? Like, why are we at war? Like, it's so messed up that these young people died. And then he gets recruited and reported into special forces to spy for his country. And so he decides to take them up on their offer, which he can't really refuse, but he goes forward anyway. And because he feels like, well, maybe if we had better intelligence, or if we were in some way doing something that will give us an advantage, then less people have to die and we won't have to have wars. So he ends up becoming a spy, and he actually kind of sucks at it at the very beginning. So, we see him learning how to be a spy in his early mission, where they are basically setting up like a smear campaign and some counterintelligence against apparently an opera singer, because it's going to be a cultural exchange event between the two countries, and the spy agency is like, no, we don't want that. This is against our purposes. And Lloyd kind of is not great at spying, so he really gets put through the ringer, and his handler, Sheila, who is a total baddie, really teaches him how to how to be a better spy and to be observant and to be mindful of yourself and your surroundings. So we get a whole spy adventure with that, an excellent story, and see him grow into that role. And then we go to the present day, where we have Anya is at school. One day the bus doesn't come, so she's at school later, and basically one of the teachers puts her to work and is like, hey, while you're just standing here, why don't you come help me, carry this stack of books and sort these papers? And she says a line that I very much enjoy. Yeah, I'm kind of busy doing nothing. Sorry. Because yeah. But he's like, well, I'll give you some cake if you come to this, I'll give you some cookies. She helps him out and they have a really interesting conversation. Keep in mind, Anya is a telepath, so she's also trying to get a read on this guy just as much as he is, hoping to connect with her and help her, maybe do better at school. Something I want to praise the author for is that even though Anya is an incredibly special little girl and she, I think, is very caring and in the way that a 6 or 7 year old in first grade would, uses her gift to try and help others. She's a genius, but she's not a savant. It's still believable that this is a little kid who is, starting out in school. And even though she has this incredible talent that nobody else knows about, it's all still filtered through the mind of a 7 year old girl. I want to praise this because very often when we have a superpowered person, particularly a child, they're just good at everything, right? And I think that works within genre conventions of the story, but this makes it all the more believable. And she's just more, much more sympathetic, I think, in that way, and that you as the reader connect with her. Because you may not be a telepath, you can remember being a little kid and like misunderstanding adults, or in your imagination, this whole thing evolves and becomes different than what is going on in the reality of the world. And I think that makes her incredibly sympathetic to the reader and still allows her to relate to her classmates. So I want to praise the author because that's a very difficult thing to do. Writing children is always hard if you're an adult, and then to balance that between writing an incredibly gifted child, but someone who is still a child is pretty cool. I thought that was very well done. And then our final set of stories involves Yor. So Yor goes out shopping one day to the department store, and another shopper has a big, huge stack of packages, like so up so high she can't even see them, and they're all gonna go tumbling down. But Yor uses her incredible athletic ability, developed from being an assassin, to save the packages and save the lady from toppling down the stairs. And so the lady's like, oh wow, thank you so much. Let me take you out to lunch. And Yor gets roped into going to this mommy, like mommy friend group type thing. And they need somebody to fill in on their volleyball team for the mommy volleyball team tournament that day. And Yor is very athletic, but she's not good at like team sports. So she absolutely obliterates like the volleyball, but she doesn't really understand the rules, so they still end up losing the game, even though like she's just spiking it and all kinds of stuff. I don't know volleyball very well, guys, but it's funny, it's super fun. And again, another instance of I think humanizing a character who's very special in that, yeah, most of us probably aren't assassins, but we can understand like, hey, I want to try my best. I want to make friends. And how do I fit into the society around me? And then also just like completely not understanding the rules is something that I feel very often. I feel like there's a lot of unspoken rules to society that don't always make sense. But anyway, enough about that. So the girls all go out for tea, and Yor ends up connecting with them as a wife and a mom, and we find out that the lady who invited her to all of this is Melinda Desmond, the mother of the child that they're trying to have Anya get close to for this whole mission. This whole mission has been about, hey, this family is like very big into politics, they're industrialists, and we need our spies, the Forger family, to get close to them and gather intelligence. Well, here we go. Now Yor was invited out to lunch by them. So that I think is a very interesting development that's going to show a lot of promise, and I'm excited to see where that goes. And we at the end we get a little mini cartoon. Anya loves to watch the show Bond Man, which is the show is Spy Wars. The character is Bond Man. She loves that cartoon. And then Frankie, Lloyd's assistant, takes Bond the dog to the dog park, and that was a fun little mini mission as well. Oh my gosh, such an incredible issue. You know, a very great story to read. We're dealing with like big themes in here, you know, about like war and child soldiers and like, is war inevitable? Oh my gosh. And, you know, the idea of like fitting in and what even is being normal anyway. And I think, as I said, the author did a really great job of balancing that and bringing a human element to a story that has been just very entertaining overall. And I thought they did a really good job with that. So I've really enjoyed this. I'm looking forward to volume 11, which will be coming in March. That's Spy Family, volume 10 by Tatsuya Endo. Check it out.
Excellent. All right. My first one here is Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, The Return, issue number one. In an alternate universe, the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers finally defeated Rita Repulsa and Lord Zedd, but at a terrible cost. In the wake of tragedy, the team went their separate ways. 22 years later, the long disbanded team reunites to mourn the losses of beloved friends, but Zack and Billy have some unexpected information to share. Jason, the Red Ranger, has been operating as a lone vigilante and has since disappeared. Will the remaining Rangers be able to track him down, especially with a mysterious figure in pursuit? Fans can experience something unlike anything they have ever before in the Power Rangers universe, in TV, or in comics. This is done by A.B. Joe Johnson, Matt Hodson, Nico Leone, Francesco Sagala, and Ed Dukeshire. Okay. So when the original Power Rangers came out in the early 90s, I was kind of like an early grade school. I think I was a perfect age. I'm still on the hype of Ninja Turtles. Then on Saturday morning comes this live action, these Power Rangers fighting these monsters and kaijus and assembling giant robots and creating bigger robots. And it had all the ingredients of something that was fun and, a lot of good comedy in there. That is something, a franchise that I had kind of left in childhood. I never really kind of carried on. I didn't watch all 30 seasons with all the spin-offs and all that stuff like that. 30 sounds like a made-up number, but according to Wikipedia, it is 30 seasons of Power Rangers. I'm assuming that includes all of the other, Mega Force. I don't know if that's a thing, but there's a lot of Power Rangers out there. And beyond the, first handful of seasons with the, mostly with the original cast, I didn't really carry on with the fandom. In comic books, Boom has been doing a lot of stuff with the Power Rangers. Club member Eric has brought up, he's a huge Power Rangers fan, and he has brought some of that stuff to the table in years past. I checked out the crossover books that they would do with the Ninja Turtles. Those have been a lot of fun. But this wasn't something I pre-ordered, and I was just looking on the shelf at the local comic shop, and I saw new Power Rangers, but I happened to see Amy Jo Johnson's name. Amy Jo Johnson was Kimberly, played the original Pink Ranger from the series. And so I started flipping through it, and just like, okay, I'm getting a good vibe. I'm starting to see these characters that I remember from the first handful of seasons, but now in kind of like a modern day, time has passed since that had happened. So I'm like, all right, you know what? Let me just give this a shot. This is an excellent comic book. I think a lot of Power Rangers fans are really going to dig this. They're most likely already picked it up anyways if you're a, a hardcore Ranger fan, but this did a great job of telling a new story for someone like me who hasn't, been keeping up with the Rangers. And it was done in a great way where, while it says it's an alternate universe, but if you just know the knowledge from the television show, you can pretty much just kind of be like, you know, this is the version they're taking. Kind of like with some of the Buffy stuff, where you get, there's not a lot of drastic things that had happened in there where it's just like, all right, you got some, recognizable characters here and there. I have no idea how this, what this compares to any current Power Ranger universe comic books, but I think if you're a fan of the TV show and you haven't picked up any comic books, this is a great start. So this is all set up with the idea that you have Billy, who is the Blue Ranger. He is speaking at an event in Angel Grove, where they're from, because there is the Trini Kwan Memorial Park and Youth Center that they are basically unveiling here at Angel Grove. And what was really cool, because it's like right away in the beginning, and I see Trini is written on there. Trini is the Yellow Ranger, the original Yellow Ranger, and sadly, in our real world, the actress had passed away tragically in a car accident in early 2000s, maybe. Tui Trang, she was the original Yellow Ranger, and I don't know what, I think the character had a different Yellow Ranger see couple seasons into the show, but she was in like the first handful, I believe. And it was really cool to see this, them taking that, real world thing, and Amy Jo Johnson and her co-writer here kind of instilling that into this alternate universe Power Rangers story, because there's a lot of great moments where they're just kind of talking about missing Trini, and you could just see some of that stuff kind of pouring out with the real life actors, reacting to a friend and cast member from the show. And so I thought that was a really good kind of plot point to kind of bring us into this world here. We see some of our familiar characters. We see I think what Bull and Skull, I think the names were. They don't name drop them in here. We see Zach there. But Kimberly is the one that is kind of lurking in the background. Since this had happened, there's an event that happened where they kind of beat Rita and Zed, and they kind of disbanded. So you have like 2 decades worth of time where the Power Rangers are not an active team because they saved the world and that's it. But we find out from all of the different Rangers who are kind of meeting up here that while they're not suiting up, they are using energy from their power coins to do things that could benefit society. I'm just going to leave that for anybody who is excited to read this or hasn't read it yet. Kimberly, who is going by a different name because there's something very tragic in her past where she does not want anything to do with this, and so she's kind of gone by a fake name in real life of the story, and she's a little perturbed at the fact that the Rangers have all been kind of doing stuff, even though they're not suiting up and jumping around and fighting crime. But she feels kind of betrayed that, they all kind of made a pact and agreed to put all of this stuff behind them. And then, as the synopsis mentioned, with Jason running around and he's doing something, I will show that stuff because while it's a lot of elder Rangers out of their costumes and such, this fully on, we do see some suit action here. So we have Jason, the original Red Ranger, he's all souped up, and it's a pretty awesome double splash page explaining what he has been up to. Because as the synopsis mentioned, he kind of went rogue and is operating as a lone vigilante, as it says. And I thought that was a really cool story setup, and it's a great ingredient for the plot to, eventually get these Rangers to come together. So the other element I will talk about too, because once again, if you're a Power Rangers fan, you've probably read this before this podcast even gets published. But I think this could be a selling point. So not only did they honor the life of their real life friend Tui Trang, the Yellow Ranger, but the other thing that is addressed here too is Jason David Frank, who was Tommy. Jason, we had lost was maybe a year or two ago. It's still pretty fresh. Lost him to suicide in real life, and seeing the Rangers, the actors who played the Rangers in real life, and really kind of following them. I had some interactions with Jason David Frank at conventions, because he was always like easily one of the best personas to be at a con to kind of unite the fans. And like his booth always had so much energy. So if you have even the best actor or actress with their fans over on this side, you have Jason David Frank over here who is just like putting on a light show and it's just like a huge circus and like tons of awesome stuff that he does because he just like made everybody's experience so amazing for the Power Ranger fandom and everybody that got to meet him. And I got to be in one of his selfies with the crowd because I was actually in the next line over for somebody else at the time, and he takes a lot of video and stuff like that. So I went to his like Instagram or something, and then I found myself in his photo and stuff. But they do touch on the status of Tommy within this Power Rangers story as well. So it's a tragic loss for both of them to not be with us today. But I think Amy Jo Johnson co-writing this story, which I think she's maybe done some children's like prose books or children's reading books, picture books. But this may be her first step into a comic book world. I could be wrong on that, but I think using the real life pain and loss, I think really instilled a powerful beginning. I don't know how many issues this is going. I'm going to assume 6 issues. Five or six at least, but this one has definitely got me hooked, and I will see this one through. So excellent, excellent stuff. So if you are reading Power Rangers in the comics, you've already have this. If you haven't watched Power Ranger or done anything Power Ranger related since the TV show, this is an excellent piece of comic book story to jump in right now. So that's my review on that. Hopefully down the road when we see club member Eric again, there's a good chance that he'll probably talk about this as well because he could probably talk about it with more passion than I brought right there, which probably says a lot because he's got a lot of current fandom with Power Rangers. So Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, the return number one.
Right. We got Darkwing Ducks, Justice Ducks. I think it's just called Justice Ducks, but Darkwing Duck is the headliner on this cover, at least. This is from Dynamite Comics. We got Roger Landridge, Carlo Loaro, Jeff Eckleberry, Mirka Andolfo, and Nate Cosby working on this. It starts out with a fun little thing with Stigmut showing off. He's got some his super strength, and he's showing off to the masses all the things that he can lift, and he keeps going bigger and bigger and bigger until he decides to pick up big old truck, and as he does, something grabs the truck from him and lifts it away, and it just so happens to be a giant robot type duck that appears. So I don't want to show off anything that's going to give anything away beyond that point. And it's your standard beautiful cartoon works of the all the duck characters that we know from Disney. Your main characters in here, I mean, it basically starts off with that, and then this being this big kaiju type duck shows up, and all of a sudden we start seeing a Stigmut can't take care of it himself, so he needs some help. And all of a sudden some other characters hear about what's going on, and we get our Justice Ducks that show up, which are basically Launchpad, Gizmo Duck, Launchpad, Morgana, and Neptunia, and Darkwing Duck all appear. But I take it that we have our four characters, and Darkwing Duck's gonna play like a Doctor Strange style thing. He'll pop in and out when they need an extra person or something to join in on the fight or whatever. But in this first issue, we get that character, that big kaiju character, it shows up, and then we find out when the other ducks show up to help out, we find out why that character showed up, what he's doing there, and we get to see the beginning of a group of characters forming together that are going to be a future gang of crime busters together. And I really enjoy this group of four characters. They all have their own unique abilities and stuff. And this first issue is really fun with Darkwing and everybody in it. And I think I only pre-ordered the first issue, and I was just going to hold off and see what happened. Whereas Darkwing Duck, I went the first three issues, then pulled away and wish I wouldn't have. And now this one I definitely want to jump on. Is this was more fun than the Darkwing Duck lineup. Just, I'm guessing because all the extra characters, just felt like you got so much more out of this first issue. But yeah, if you like any of those characters, I'm sure you'd enjoy this, and they all are fun together. And I would expect Darkwing Duck to make lots of appearances in the future, some way, shape, or form, since his name is included with the title. So, but yeah, check that out from Dynamite.
Oh, cool, looks fun. All right, the next one on my list here is another off-the-rack purchase, something I do remember from the catalog, but I just kind of laughed at it and passed it by. But I was in the mood for it. Godzilla Valentine's Day Special. It's not as silly as it sounds. Like, it's not Godzilla, you know, going out on dates or anything like that. But, you know, even though I would totally read that, this was a very good story. Is there anything as romantic as seeing the world together, hopping from country to country to take in the sights and splendor in the fleeting seconds before Godzilla smashes the skyline? Truly, there's nothing like the thrill of an international game of cat and mouse between an intrepid amateur kaiju researcher and a global kaiju response lieutenant. But when you're up against Godzilla, it's hard to have a bigger crush. This is by Zoe Tunnel, Sebastian Perez, Rebecca Nolte, Joanna Natale, and David Mariotti. This was an excellent comic. It's a one-shot comic. I don't think I've read any Godzilla comic books. I think there is maybe some crossovers they probably have done with, you know, other franchises, but I know there's a Justice League one going on right now and stuff, but I can't think if I've ever read Godzilla in a comic book. The last kaiju-related one would be the giant kaiju that I know, you know, I talked about here on the podcast, and Kirby had read that one as well. So this one here is following a young woman who is basically just kind of going through her everyday job. She's a data entry level at a cell phone company. And she's just in her cubicle, normal office thing going on. And right away, page number one, giant boom outside. We see some destruction as basically Godzilla is right outside the office building. And we see just Godzilla kind of pop up. And immediately we just cut to the wreckage. And the young woman, the star of our story, she, I forget what her name is in here, but basically she was knocked out. She survived this attack. And she's basically being the company's being downsized. And because of this attack, she gets an email basically saying, yep, due to the damage and everything with Godzilla, we're making changes in the company and your position is not available. You know, it's not useful anymore. And you will be paid according to the severance package included in your contract. And she's kind of reading that and she looks very closely at that specific thing. We cut to a year later, she's in Singapore and now she's basically driving around on her like a scooter bike or something, like a little mini bike, motorbike. And she is actually chasing around Godzilla. She's tracking Godzilla. And in my head, I'm thinking like, okay, is she like finding places to go where she can like benefit from, like, you know, Godzilla destroys this and she gets severance packages? That, based on that, like her looking at that, I'm thinking like, oh, this is where this comic is going. It's not going that way, but basically her life experience of Godzilla eliminating her job led her to track him down and basically become like an expert tracker and researcher. And she's kind of putting out information and kind of trying to help protect people. Kind of, she's following these patterns of Godzilla, and we see all of the other kaiju characters that are all in the Godzilla world and everything, your Gamera and all that kind of stuff, and I think Mechagodzilla. We see all of those characters in here as she kind of follows them globetrotting around the world, and she's looking at patterns. She's kind of knowing when they're going to strike. She's able to kind of get the information out and try to protect people. But all while this is happening, there's a sort of like a government agency that's going around because they're doing a very similar thing, except with like a military backing and funding and all that kind of stuff, is they're basically just trying to kill Godzilla and these monsters. And there's some opposing views between our two leading ladies in this story, the one that's working for this military type association, and then our kind of freelance kaiju expert. And they're kind of clashing because, one's getting way to the other, and they just kind of have what you kind of, get the idea because they're right there on the cover, but, they have this, this kind of quote unquote hatred for each other, but there's a sense of like you again, and you can definitely see that there's a romantic thing that's kind of stirring in the air. And it's all related to Godzilla, and they both kind of ultimately have the same mission of wanting to protect people. I wish I just had the name of our lead character here, but they don't say him too often. It's a lot of there's not like a lot of like dialogue amongst characters, a lot of inner monologue and stuff like that. But so yeah, I don't.
Godzilla.
Yeah, Godzilla, that was the name. Now our leading lady, I forget what her name is here, but anyways, she's the one that, she's trying to protect the people more so directly, whereas the other people are trying to protect the people by, just killing these things, and they all just have different ways of approaching Godzilla, and that leads to a romance. That's basically, a big setup for it. There's a lot of stuff in there to that I kind of left out, but if you want your Godzilla, your other kaiju action, you're getting a lot of that with this kind of background romance that's happening. And yeah, I thought it was a really good story. It was a really good one shot. Like I said, I thought it was going one way, which I thought would have been a funny idea of just being like, okay, how can I financially benefit from, Godzilla taking out, like insurance type of things or whatever. And that's where I thought it was going, but it made the person a little more, likable, I guess, in the sense that she wasn't doing that. But I thought it was going an extreme comedy way. But this was a lot of fun. Nothing is really as hilarious beyond the title, so that's kind of where the comedy stops. It's not, a slapsticky parody type of thing, as the title could, make you assume, but it was definitely a very good one-shot story. So that is Godzilla Valentine's Day Special.
No skyscraper makeout sessions, huh?
No, it's a little different than the kind of the graphic scenes we saw in that other kind of parody type book. That's a whole nother title.
Right. My last one is Van Helsing Vampire Hunter. Yeah, I guess that is the full name. Issue one. This one, I'll give the synopsis quick first. Yeah, return to the Victorian age for a classic tale in the life of young Liesel Van Helsing. To this day, the Van Helsing name haunts the waking hours of vampires throughout the world. But in the late 1800s, at the height of the War of the Night in Europe, a new yet forebodingly familiar evil is rising. I can't read today. And this time, even the famed vampire hunter may not be formidable enough to stop it. If you've never read Van Helsing with Liesel Van Helsing and you'd like to get it, I know it's a vast world of comics in the Xenoscope world. Lots of crossovers with all the other wonderful female characters they use in their world. This is a great jumping on point for anybody that would like to be fresh to it. I don't think you'd need to know anything from her past to read this. And this is a simple 3-issue run that they're doing, but it starts out basically with a nightmare that Liesel's having of her something from her past, a battle that she dealt with in her past where she lost her dad. And it leads itself into vampires, vampire hunters. We have a lost vampire hunter. It's a group of Liesel with a group of other hunters. They're hunting, going to a place where one of their friends that's a vampire hunter went to, and he just hasn't checked in, just disappeared for quite a amount of time. I don't know what the timeline was, but he was gone for at least a couple months or something, and everybody started worrying about him. Liza showed up and they told her about everything that was going on, so they decided to join up and go to this place that he was last known to go to and find out, see if we can figure, if they can figure out what happened to him or where he's at and get caught up with him. And it takes him into the search that gets him way more than they expect. It's gonna take them deeper into this vampire realm that they're going to be dealing with in these three issues, and gives a little bit more background of why he was there and why he decided to hunt these certain vampires by himself and what happened with him when he got there and stuff. But it's, yeah, it's a great jumping on point for anybody fresh to the series. And I love this character. I love all these characters in the Xenoscope world. You have everything from Liesl, the vampire hunter. You got a Jekyll and Hyde character. She's basically Liesl's friend. That's her her muscle when she needs it. And you got Robina Loxley. She's a one-eyed archery specialist. And there's, now we got coming out Pooh, a Winnie the Pooh style character coming up in the new previews catalog and stuff. So they got a good array of different characters if you're into any of those from past history and you want a female stylized format for them. And they still have the history to the original Van Helsings and stuff like that. Like, her dad was the Van Helsing vampire hunter that we know, and then she took over his trade after he passed and all that stuff. But yeah, this is a great series to get on if you're into that at all. So it's got a little steampunk feel to it.
Good, good. All right. Well, that is going to do it for the weekly reviews, but we have a big news segment, so let's get to it.
And now the news.
Welcome to the previews preview. We're going to do all of the February catalog, starting with Marvel, jumping over to DC, then going to the Giant catalog. So I will kick it off here with Marvel. This is the February catalogs for products coming out in April and beyond. As is a trend with the last couple times we've done this, my picks have been getting smaller and smaller, and I could not find anything that was like a brand new thing from Marvel that I'm getting. So I'm just going to spotlight the second issue of the Ms. Marvel miniseries, co-written by Iman Vellani. I really dug that first one. I talked about the first issue preview in the last month's catalog. So issue two is coming out, but so I'm just going to spotlight that, and then we'll see if any of you guys have anything. So Kirby, anything from Marvel?
Yes, you're showing the cover right there, but Blood Hunt is the new Marvel's big series that's coming out. I hate getting on big series runs because all the side things and stuff, but this is going to be vampire related. I got a lot of fun vampire covers that are going to probably come out, which will make me stupidly buy things that I wouldn't read normally. But I think I'm going to jump on the first. It's a 5-issue run for just the Blood Hunt part of it to see what it's all about. But the skies have gone dark, the sun hiding its face from the carnage to come. The children of the night, the vampires, have risen from the dark and hidden places of the world as one to drown the Marvel Universe in blood. Earth's final night has fallen. Can even the heroes of this doomed world stem the tide of blood that is to come? So it's going to cross over all the characters, and we'll see where it goes. But for 5 issues, I think it can handle at least the main concept of the story.
Yeah, I didn't really give this too much attention at first, but I haven't done like a Marvel event in a while. And yeah, maybe I'll end up picking this up.
Feel it's going to be like Marvel Zombies. I stupidly didn't get into it, and then I started picking at it, and I fell in love with it. Now I ended up spending a bunch of money collecting all of it.
And they show some cool art preview pages there, and I was kind of looking at that, being like, all
Yeah,
right.
I figured you'd like that image with her in it.
Yeah, so
Scarlet Witch.
might be changed around. I think when it comes around, I may end up checking it out. So, all right, cool. Katie, anything from Marvel?
Sure. So we have Darth Maul, black, white, and red. They did Darth Vader, black, white, and red last year. This is the number one issue of Darth Maul, black, white, and red. I think I'm going to get the trade, but we're starting up this new series. It's written by Ben Percy, art is by Stefano Raphael and Alex Maleev on the cover. Basically, a prison ship transporting a cult goes offline and off grid, and Palpatine sends Darth Maul to investigate, and then chaos ensues. This is going to be available on April 24th, 2024, and it will be $5.99. Check it out.
Yeah, I've been jumping on all the black, white, and reds and stuff, and I'm not a big fan of Darth Maul, but I still want to read it, so I think I might wait for the trade like you too and pick it up, because I'm guessing it's going to probably be a 5-issue run too. So,
Yeah, I betcha.
right, my next, you're done, right, on Marvel?
Yep.
I have one more, but I figured we'd do a round, right? Okay, go ahead.
My next one. I was surprised that they're coming out with a new run for Deadpool, because the last one I expected to go longer, but it didn't apparently. But we got Deadpool number one starting up. And this has Cody Ziegler doing this. I don't know much about him, but I like Miles Morales and stuff that he's done with it. So we got had a wild ride planned for the Merc with the Mouth, introducing a new terrifying new villain who won't stop until he catches Wade in his death grip. But all work and no play makes Deadpool a very dead boy. But yeah, a new character. I figured out I'll at least check out the first 3 issues of it and see where it goes.
Cool, Katie.
All right, my last pick for Marvel is not new to me, but it might be new to some people. We have a Star Wars Epic Collection, The Old Republic number one. The reason why I'm highlighting this is I spent a year tracking down an affordable used copy of this, and it still cost me double what they're reissuing it for. It is very good. I enjoyed it. This is the Old Republic, so it is kind of like a prequel to the game. It's by John Jackson Miller, who is a Wisconsin author, so go support a local creative, if you will. It's going to be in shops on May 22nd, 2024, and it will be $45. If you are collecting these in physical form, you probably want to go ahead and pre-order this one because they were pretty hard to find and outrageously priced for a while. But Star Wars Epic Collection, The Old Republic, Volume 1. Check it out. It is fun.
Yeah, I remember you talking about that on the show, your journey and your hunt for all those. So, Kirby, anything left from Marvel?
All right, now this is just an example of one of the vampire covers that I'm debating on. I got a Spider-Gwen one that's coming out.
That's cool.
I picked up today. I don't know if I like it yet. I'm going to read it first, but they have Kid Venom, number 1 to 4, coming out. I got like a Kid Venom. I don't know if it's like a prequel or something. I'm like, I just picked up issue one. How can it be coming out in 3 months? But this one, you got Japan 9977. Kid Venom has made his presence known to the evil symbiotes, taking people and creatures hostage. But who else has their eye on Kentaro and his symbiote? The world of Kid Venom expands as new characters and dangers are revealed. Breakout manga creator Taigami continues his vision of Kid Venom in this brand new series. I just like this manga version of the character. That's why I picked up that issue today to check out. And then my last one is, oh no, that is it for me, because my last one was Darth Maul.
Okay. We'll jump over to the DC catalog. Katie, you want to kick it off for us, rather?
Sure. I took a look at the DC catalog. There's nothing that I'm interested in getting, but I'm open to a club pick. As always, we often find some pretty cool books that way, but nothing new from DC.
Okay, the one pick I'm going to have, I had alluded to it earlier, but Justice League versus Godzilla versus Kong, the DC Universe's Legendaries MonsterVerse, Justice League versus Godzilla versus Kong. This is the trade paperback version here, I assume. And yeah, so I didn't pick this. Oh, there's a hardcover version. I didn't pick this up originally, but with the upcoming, I love Godzilla Minus One. I saw that in the theaters. We have the next Godzilla Kong movie coming out at the end of March and got some trailers for that. So I'm just kind of really hyped and in that kind of mode. So I think when this comes out, I'm assuming an advance solicit. Yeah, it comes out for June. But yeah, I'm gonna check out Justice League versus Godzilla versus Kong in hardcover edition.
Yeah, I was surprised. I seen they have issue 7 coming out for that already. I was surprised it was even going to go that long. So it's
Yeah, and I'm guessing
going to
what.
have 2 volumes at least.
Yeah. But oh no, it looks like 1 through 7.
Oh, okay. So that is going to be the final issue then. Huh.
I
Then I
guess.
might have to pick it up. We'll see.
Yep, this
All
one.
right, my only DC one is Harley Quinn 2024 Annual. As you can tell just from the picture right there, Harley Quinn's got a little Squirrel Girl style look. I wonder why, because Erica Henderson's doing this. We got Toot Toot, Ladies and Germs. Don't you just hate it when you bust your butt left and right with no reward? Whether you're devoted to a life of heroism, villainy, or regular personism, everyone needs a break. Which is where Harley Quinn 2024 Annual comes in. 40 pages of luxurious, luxury, cruise-based comedy guaranteed to leave you feeling rested, relaxed, and ready to frickin' solve a maritime murder mystery. When Zatanna gets framed for a mystery on a cruise ship, old Shamluck Harley is on the case. But yeah, I was going back and forth, but the picture instantly grabbed me. I knew it was Erica Henderson. It's like, I gotta get it. So,
Yeah, written and drawn by her, so that's cool.
yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, so that's just normally on my list because I've been following Harley Quinn, but I didn't look in the details. So yeah, cool. I think I think Katie said that was it for DC, and I didn't have anything else flagged. Did you have anything else flagged?
That was it.
Okay, so we will jump into the giant catalog. I will kick it off. Okay, I'm going to start with my most anticipated first, which is actually the last in the catalog. I've got a bookmark here. This is from Random House Graphic. We're talking about Dr. Seuss graphic novel, Cat Out of Water Hardcover. Discover Dr. Seuss's whimsical world like never before in this colorful graphic novel companion to The Cat in the Hat. It's a normal day with normal chores for Sally and her brother until everything turns topsy-turvy when the Cat in the Hat arrives with the whirlwind of fun and the hilarious but chaotic antics of Thing One and Thing Two. The day promises to be anything but boring, yet Sally's wise pet, the fish, warns them about letting the cat stay. The question looms: can they wrap up their tasks before their parents return, or will the cat's zany escapades throw them off course? With brand new illustrations and easy to follow paneled storytelling, this graphic novel is an excellent bridge for kids transitioning to chapter books. This is done by Art Baltazar. Art is I'm trying to think here if there's any other. Yep, I think that's all for the credits. This was big news that Art had revealed that he was working on the first ever Dr. Seuss graphic novels, and he did a bunch of different character sketches, and they liked his Cat in the Hat the best, and so they went with that. So this is something that is coming out in beginning of May, because I think it leads into Free Comic Book Day weekend, and he's been talking about on the recent live streams that they're hoping to kick off a signing tour at Oh Yeah Comics in beautiful downtown Skokie for that free comic book day. So there's a good chance that I am going to be there for that Saturday. The next Sunday, I got to be in Madison for a MightyCon show that I'm setting up in. So it's going to be a busy weekend. Yes. Oh, okay.
I'm back. Hi.
they happened to have an Oh Yeah podcast yesterday, and I caught it halfway through, and Art mentioned something about possibly something in Wisconsin that he's going to have to show up at. I'm curious if it might be Madison, MyUkon, or the following Milwaukee one.
Because I noticed he had mentioned Milwaukee, but I think because they were talking about the DuPage Comic-Con that's happening like in a month or two. And then he goes, I think there's a Milwaukee one, which was the one that we just had. I think that's because the Dr. Seuss people are putting him on, like, I think a 5-city tour that's going to start with Oh Yeah Comics in Skokie and end at Oh Yeah Comics in New York at their Harrison location. And in between there, they're paying him to fly out to other places. So he's kind of doing a, I think like a Midwest / East Coast little mini tour there. But yeah, I'm pretty sure it kicks off at their, at the Free Comic Book Day weekend in Skokie. Leading into that, I am going to reach out to him, see if he wants to be on this very podcast for Crimson Cowl Comic Club to talk about it. And based on the schedule, it's going to be one of those things that might serve it as a giant preview, unless we get them like the week after all that mess. But because I would much rather have it in person, but it seems like, you know, he's going to start that busyness right there. So
he's going to be going crazy.
So yeah, I'll reach out to him and see what he would prefer, whether we do it the week before or the week or two after. But either way, I'm going to see if he wants to show up on the show for a special segment. So anyways, Dr. Seuss graphic novel, Cat Out of Water, Art Balthazar, coming in May.
Yeah, and I'll definitely be getting that one. All right, we got Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles from IDW, issue 150. I usually don't talk about the ongoing, but this one caught my eye. I luckily picked up this nice little IDW catalog that came out. And it's like, I think this is the first time I've seen them have their own previews catalog.
Yep.
So I hope they keep up with that. But yeah, everything has been building to this double-sized celebration. And here, at the end, we'll return to the start. Donatello has been searching for his future self to understand how he can fight Armageddon. Now, knowing where he is, or should we say when he is, Donatello is racing to his past to convene with his future. Can he get there and learn what he needs to before Armageddon eats the TMNT out of the timeline? This epic finale from writer Sophie Campbell and a roster of all-star artists pays off on years of IDW storytelling, reckoning with the history of the Turtles while also setting the stage for the next mutation of must-read TMNT comics. And I loved what they did with issue 100. So this sounds like they're going to play a little bit with that again. So I'm jumping on it. And they have a nice wraparound cover with probably most of the characters from the world.
Yeah.
And I might just have to grab both covers because I love the other cover also.
Yeah, there's Kevin Eastman variant as cover B, I believe.
Yep.
But yeah, there's I've been following it since a lot of us kind of like checked out that Road to 100, and I'm excited about this as well as what's to come, because Jason Aaron has been announced as the new writer for a brand new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number one. Superstar writer. I know him mostly from all of his Marvel stuff, and when I heard that, I'm excited for this finale, and I'm excited to see what's to come in the new regime. And regarding that IDW catalog, I know in the last like half a year or so, we started seeing their section get less colorful because they wouldn't have any images posted in the solicits at all in the giant catalog. And it feels like maybe it wasn't so much like, oh, we don't have time to post these. Maybe it was the diamond thing where they just kind of that an image and everybody's kind of getting crunched and thrown away out of the opening spotlight and stuff. So yeah, now they have their own catalog while still also having a small list in the main catalog too, but this will be the one to check out for full details and art and stuff. Okay. Katie, any independent picks?
I do. Yes. So over from Dark Horse, we have Cat and Gamer, volume 5. So volume 4 is just days away from being released. It is by Wataru Nadatani. And the premise is a young lady who is named Riko Kozakura. She's an office worker, really keeps to herself. But at home, she really loves playing video games, and she ends up adopting a stray kitten named Musubi. And I don't think it's a spoiler because it is the cover image. It looks like Musubi is going to be getting a new kitty friend in Volume 4, and then Volume 5 has both cats on the cover, and it's just going to be following along in their life, how they learn to interact together, and as the description says, level up and gain XP. This has been such a cute series. It's super fun. It will be available on June 26, 2024. It will be $11.99, and then Volume 4 is releasing on February 27, so just 10 days from when we record this episode. Check it out. It's been a lot of fun so far.
Good. My next huge pick is Universal Monsters Creature from the Black Lagoon Lives, number one. This is a mini series. A new horror dream team resurrects one of cinema's most iconic monsters. I'm going to skip past all of the other praise here. Years after the events of the original film, journalist Kate Marsden hunts for a notorious serial killer in the heart of the Amazon. Hot on the trail of this madman, she soon encounters an unexpected new threat. But is it friend or foe, or is it simply the creature from the Black Lagoon? The creative team is awesome. Both of the drawn variant covers are awesome. And I was talking with Kirby, but they also have a blank variant cover, which I've already pre-ordered three of them because I at least want to tackle one of them. And I may get the other ones done by some artist if I don't also tackle other ones. I've been drawing a lot of creature, and I think it would be great. So I'm taking advantage of a pre-order price and getting some blank variants as well. So I'm all in for the Universal Monsters Creature from the Black Lagoon Lives number one. Kirby?
All right, I'm gonna put these together, and I'm not gonna read all their synopsises because I kind of did a preview today of stuff. But we have Geiger number one coming out. I don't know if this. I'm guessing it's a reproduction of the original Geiger series. It is the ongoing series, so. Might have some new stuff in here, but I think it's off the base, the first one. Then we got Redcoat number one coming out and Rook number one already in this catalog. So I will definitely be jumping on all three of those.
Cool. All right, Katie.
Okay, also at Dark Horse, we have another run of Witcher comics coming. This time it's going to be about Corvo Bianco. You haven't played The Witcher 3 or are playing it, that's going to be a major spoiler, but that is from the Blood and Wine expansion. Block your ears, but Geralt gets gifted a mansion as part of his payment, and then at the end of the DLC, which is kind of like the end of this character's arc, your love interest from the game comes and moves in with you, and you retire from being a Witcher for the most part and enjoy the good life, in the sunshine, drinking wine, and occasionally still fighting monsters, which looks like is going to happen in this comic book. So it says, with Yennefer at his side, the routines of a Witcher are eclipsed, but the stains of history are deep, and with blood and wine, every drop attracts those who want more. This features regular writer Bartosz Stizbor, a United States debut of Italian comics artist Corrado Mastandrea, and Jorge Molina on the covers. I really enjoy these series. I usually grab them in trades. The most recent one was Wild Animals, and this will be available on May 8th, 2024, and it's going to be $3.99. There's a couple different covers, including a video game cover. That is The Witcher from Dark Horse and CD Projekt Red. Check it out.
Okay, keeping it in Dark Horse, I am talking about Madman Library Edition Volume 6 hardcover. So far we currently have five hardcover volumes collecting Mike and Laura Allred's like independent creator-owned works with Madman and other stuff spanning like 30 years. And originally it was going to be six volumes, and then it went to five volumes, and then they're like, you know what, we're doing six volumes still. And so volume number six is in the current catalog, which is going to dive into the graphic music and graphique musique, as well as like a Mr. Gum special, as well as the 3D special, which contains one of my favorite stories within the 3D special. But the other awesome thing that is included is their most recent creator-owned work being X-Ray Robot. It's a mini series. I don't know if I ever talked about X-Ray Robot to anybody on this podcast before, but in issue number three of X-Ray Robot, I appear as in a cameo. I'm drawn into issue number three, so that is now being reprinted into a hardcover volume. So I'm excited to not only get the sixth and, you know, right now final volume until they make more stuff, but mostly because X-Ray Robot's included, and now I get to be grouped in with some of the work that they did at the start of their career, like with the graphic music stuff. So it just feels good to kind of be included, as well as having my favorite Madman story being in this collection too. So it's a win-win-win-win-win for me. So I am checking out the Madman Library Edition Volume 6 hardcover coming sometime soon. Maybe in summer, probably. All right, Kirby.
They got a hack slash, kill your idols. It's a one shot. Slasher hunters Cassie Hack and Vlad are back with a one shot collecting the all new Kill Your Idols serial from the Image 30th Anniversary Anthology series. When Cassie and Vlad encounter an unusual slasher, they're led to the front door of a cyborg former super soldier, Super Patriot. Now the horror continues. Their horror hunters are drawn into a race against time alongside a lost super team in a tour of the gritty underbelly of the Image universe, featuring art from the original Hack Slash team, Stefano Casilli and Tim Seeley. Yeah, Super Patriot, that's part of Savage Dragon world. So I'm curious if eventually we're going to get Savage Dragon put into the Hack and Slash world, hopefully.
Oh, cool. Jump over to Katie.
All right, my last pick for the indies is still in Dark Horse. We have Kanto, the hardcover edition, volume one. I have been wanting to read the series for years since it first came out, I think in like 2018, and recently was like, oh yeah, I still wanted to read that, and was looking at the trades were hard to come by, so I don't know if they were like a Kickstarter thing, but I am super excited to see that they're being reissued. This is going to be Kanto, If I Only Had a Heart. It's written by David S. Boer, art by Drew Zucker and Vittorio Estone and Daron Bennett. So the premise is that Kanto's people have been slaves for generations, and they are forbidden to love, but Kanto falls in love with a little tin girl, and her mechanical clock gets damaged beyond repair, so Kanto goes on a journey to find her a new heart. This reminds me quite a bit of The Wizard of Oz, so I'm going to be interested to see if that is part of it. But I've only heard wonderful things about this series. I've read a couple just floppies, and they've all been lovely. I'm excited about it. It's going to be in stores on June 5th, 2024, for $29.99. Check it out and get your pre-orders in for Kanto, the hardcover edition, volume one.
Alrighty. Over at Archie Comics, start your engines. Archie and Friends Hot Rod Racing. A brand new story kicks off this Need for Speed issue in the race to save face. First appearance of Daisy Thunder of the Southside Serpents challenges Archie and his crew to a charity race throughout Riverdale. Can Archie prove that his souped-up jalopy can best Daisy's Hot Wheels? All that, plus more racing fun. I get all these anyways, but a brand new character of is it Daisy Thunder of the Southside Serpents, and looks like a lot of fun. Souped up jalopy. I mean, what more could I ask for? So I'm definitely getting that.
Yeah, I'm getting that one too because I just love the old school cars and all that stuff and the old racing format. But and same Kanto is I got teased with in a pre-comic book day, and he's a fun character. So
Yeah.
All right, my next one is Drawing Blood.
Yes.
This is, oops. Series premiere. Kevin Eastman returns with a look into the roller coaster life of a successful comics creator. When you create a global franchise before you turn 20, what happens next? Welcome to the world of Shane Bookman, a cartoonist whose real life has become more absurd than any comic book. Figure I'll at least check out the first few issues, but Kevin Eastman, and that's all you got to say.
That's on my list as well. My next pick here is something I first heard about, I think, on Franco's show when he had Chris Giarrusso. I say that wrong every time. Giarrusso. I just have to split it up like that. Officer Clawsome, Volume 1, Crime Across Time. All right. Caper Cove's crime-fighting duo, Clawsome and Stariana, are back to solve a time-bending mystery of epic proportions. A puzzling mystery is afoot, and Officer Clawsome and his partner, Stariana, are on the clock to solve the case. But the investigation takes a turn for the strange when the town's resident evil genius, Brain Sturgeon, dives into a portal of the past. Fighting crime, dodging dinosaurs, and wrangling Wild West outlaws, these two best friends have gotten tangled up in a mystery fit for history, fit for a history book, rather. I'm too excited for this. Will Caper Cove's favorite dynamic duo be able to save the future, or will they be stranded in the past forever? So this is Officer Clawsome. This alluded to the fact that this is a sequel to another Officer Clawsome. And so I'm going to go and seek that out. But this seems like something up my alley. It sounds like a lot of fun. And it's art by Chris Giarrusso. That's how I'm going to say it from now on, because it'll make it sound like I don't have trouble saying it. There we go. Kirby.
This one I'm iffy on, just because I want these, but they put such a high price tag on all the music books that come out. But we have Jimi Hendrix, Purple Haze.
Yeah.
Got a beautiful cover to it. A couple of nice covers to it. But it's done by Mellow Brown from Blade Runner Origins and DJ Ben Hameen. And Tom Mandrake is the artist. In a galaxy where a tyrannical force has silenced music and enslaved all life, Hendrix must embark on a perilous quest to find a magical talisman, powerful enough to unlock the incredible latent powers of his trademark sound. Like, the artwork's beautiful. I might have to bite the bullet and just spend a few extra bucks on one of it. And if it's going to be one, it's going to be Jimi Hendrix. So.
I also thought that looked amazing.
Yeah.
Over at Keen Spot Entertainment, Robot Plus Girl number one. A robot on the brink of adolescence wanders aimlessly through the city, ready to give up on life and donate himself for spare parts, until a girl stumbles across his broken, discarded body. In appreciation of her compassion and empathy, the robot attempts to help the girl out with a financial windfall, however, unbeknownst to him. I love unbeknownst, that's a great word. His procurement of funds brings unwanted conflict with the powers that be. As the girl tries to fix the robot's ethical oversight, he gets apprehended by unknown assailants and must now fight for the life he once wanted to give up on if he ever wants to see his newfound friend again. Brand new series. I'm not too familiar with the creator, but Mike White, creator of Penguin Random House's acclaimed graphic novel series, Melly Bean. But I just like the idea of Robot Plus Girl, and I dug these designs that they offer on the covers. There's no, like, Matt Rogers or Troy Dungera attachment to this. This is me just being excited for something that sounds pretty cool. Happens to be from King Spot. So, Robot Plus Girl number one.
All right. I did a one-shot on them, but we got Lester of the Lesser Gods is back. With issue one from Eric Poll, Gideon Kendall, and Lucky Yates is in here. We got combined twisted comedic talents to bring you Lester, of the Lesser Gods, originally created as an unproduced animated short by Powell. A decade ago, the concept was revived when the two writers were looking for a comic project to work on. Lester, the LARPing son of Odin, wanders the post-apocalyptic wasteland after thwarting Satan's attempt to bring about the end of days. But can this hero of the downtrodden survive the battle arena of Will Fry, the Technomancer guy, with an alternate special edition cover by Eric Powell? But yeah, that one shot was fun, so I'm looking forward to this too.
Cool. I'm excited to add this to the collection because I seem to have a lot of roller derby related comic books and graphic novels, even though I never really had any obsession beyond some things I've seen in movies. But I'm just kind of like a closeted roller derby fan without like ever actually really watching roller derby. But this is Blood City Rollers graphic novel from Labyrinth Road. Ice skater Mina is on a one-track path to Olympic gold and glory. That is, until she totally wipes out at her biggest competition and is kinda sorta kidnapped by undead kids on roller skates. Sucked into the high-stakes world of paranormal roller derby, she finds herself recruited, quote-unquote, by a squad of vampires who need a human player to complete their team, just in time to save the league from losing it all. Between learning to play derby well enough to kick butt on the track, crushing hard on the dreamy team captain, and navigating the spooky rules of the supernatural, how can Mina go from striving to be a 10 alone to becoming one of nine chaotic bodies forming a perfectly imperfect team? There's a lot of information there, but it sounds like a lot of fun. I was, you know, Blood City Rollers, I was drawn from that name, and then it started bringing in, you know, vampire themes and such. So the creator is VP Anderson and Tatiana Hill. Not familiar with them, but I will be when this book comes out. Blood City Rollers graphic novel.
All right, I read from back in the 90s a few of these comics and really enjoyed them. I'm not going to read all the basics of all of them, but we have Nexus. They have six different comics coming out. Yeah. Nexus, the newspaper strips, volume 2, the battle for Thune World, number 1. You got Nexus, the newspaper strips, volume 2, the battle for Thune World, number 2 through 5. And you have the art of Steve Rude. And they're selling, well, the art of Steve Rude will cancel off that list. But the other ones are all selling from 50 cents to a dollar. They got some discounted deal going for these. But if you want a fun character, travels the cosmos and with the special powers, saving planets and stuff, it's, I don't know the full basis of that character because it's been a couple of years since I read that, but I know I really enjoyed it. So for that price, you really can't go that wrong.
Okay, the last one on my list from this giant catalog, just kind of concluding how there's a lot of awesome stuff that I love from all different, you know, realms of comic books and graphic novels. The Sheets Collection Slipcase Box Set. I don't know how Brenna Thumler keeps making me buy the same books over and over and over and over again, but because they're awesome. So not only the trade paperbacks that came out and then slowly coming out with the deluxe hardcover editions, and now they're putting all three paperbacks into a slipcase, which normally I'm like, okay, I don't need to buy them again, but you know how you get those people in is when you design a new slipcase cover that has different art that you've never seen before across this trilogy. So I'm like, all right, Brenna, I guess I'm buying these books yet again. I've even bought a couple sets where I just like getting ready to gift them when certain kids in my life are getting older. I can hand them off to them. And, you know, Sheets is the trilogy I'm just going to never stop buying. So the Sheets Collection Slipcase Box Set from Brenna Thumler and Odie Press.
Yeah, I figured I might as well pick it up so I don't have to dig my other ones out if we do have her come on for an interview. So
yeah, I was gonna reach out. I was going to reach out to her because we had talked about it at the end of last year. You know, she has the hardcover of Delicates coming out soon, but I think there's like a mystery project that she still hasn't. There's a lot of stuff that she keeps like announcing and doing. For instance, following her on Instagram, there's a Sheetz musical that's happening locally to her that she wrote and they're being casted. It's all like she's a big theater person and everything like that. And I think she had acted or actually she wrote a like a play or something with some local theater group to her. And so now there's like a Sheetz musical that's happening and I'm like, I gotta figure out. I'm like, I gotta get like a bootleg of that or something like there's a lot of awesome stuff. So I gotta reach out to her and see if there's a certain time of the year that will work out for her to promote whatever she's got coming out. Okay. You take it home with whatever you
I
got.
don't know if I'm going to check it out yet. I'm still debating, but I mentioned it earlier and I just wanted to show it. But from Xenoscope, you got Pooh versus
Oh.
Bambi.
I
And
must
it
have
looks
missed.
like it's the first male character of the Xenoscope world. So it's kind of got me interested. I might have to check it out. But yeah, Pooh versus Bambi, that just sounds fun. And then this last one that I'm also debating on checking out. I probably will get it, but I'm gonna probably wait for the trade because it is 6 issues overall. We have Uncanny Valley number one, and it's done by Tony Fleeks, and I just been falling in love with this creator. And it's just I got hooked up through him through Local Man, and now interested in checking it out. But Oliver is a seemingly typical 12-year-old boy, except for hit. For a mysterious family history that seems to start and end with his mother and unexplained powers, that is. He can do things other boys can't, to the point of landing him in some trouble. Baffled by the surreal, cartoonish nature of his abilities, and followed by a murder of peculiar crows, the mystery behind Oliver's family history finally unfolds. It's done by Tony Fleeks and Dave Wachner, and they also mention it's kind of a reimagining of Who Framed Roger Rabbit, which I love. So, yeah, with that cartoony style artwork, I think it can be a lot of fun. So, I will probably have to wait for the trade, but who knows? Might at least check out issue one to make sure I like it.
Cool. And yeah, I must have missed that Winnie the Pooh thing, so I'm gonna have to look into that as well because that sounds interesting. At least for a one issue checkout.
And that
Okay.
is it.
Good, good. That is gonna do it. Even though we offered a lot of picks there, we definitely cannot cover everything. So we always recommend to go to your local comic book shop, ask for the previews catalogs. That way you can go through, see what's coming out. You can send your pre-orders in to your shop. They can have it ordered and sent, you know, have it set aside for you. So check that out, whether it's in store or your preferred online retailer. So that is going to do it for this show. And let me just get to the final plugs here. Upcoming events. We just had the Milwaukee Mighty Con for myself, David, and David. We all did very well, and I'll speak for myself on my side though is that it was an awesome turnout. Lots of people showed up. There was very little downtime. I was drawing some things on the side, and it took me like 3 4 hours to draw one
Oh.
little Sonic card because I kept like having to
Nice.
interact with customers and do transactions, which you know I'm very happy to do and set that art aside. But yeah, Kirby and Shelley were there, and I extend my thank you to them for showing the support and to myself, as well as David and David picking up some artwork and then seeing some repeat customers and meeting all new customers. I do want to give a shout out to
Yeah.
one couple who she was looking at my Winter Muppets cards, and I had a whole sheet of them. And she pointed out to one of the empty spots, asking if that was Kermit. Like, oh yeah, I sold Kermit back in December at the Madison Mighty Con. She goes, oh, she's like, otherwise I would have bought the whole set and I wanted the whole set. And I was like, whoa.
Oh.
So immediately, without like thinking, I was really quick on it, where I'm like, well, I'll tell you what, if you are serious about wanting to buy all of this entire page, then I'll just draw you a Kermit and send it to you for free. So she was all in. And then I sent out, I can't show them because they were in the mail and they showed up to their new home. But I drew her a Kermit and a Beaker and a Fozzie. I haven't drawn Fozzie in a while
Oh.
yet. So I gave some extra surprises there to show my thanks for wanting, that was my biggest like single transaction
That's
of somebody
awesome.
like just like looking at them and just being like right away being like, oh, I have to have all of these right now. And I'm like, okay, let's make it happen. It's very sad to see him go. I have to just now look at those pictures that I had posted. But yeah, it was super fun and got a couple people to request some things, gave some information out to say that I'm kind of slowly getting into like a commission thing that I would send, for
Okay.
home and everything to do little cards. But yeah, it was definitely awesome and seeing, the reactions to our tables there. It was just so much fun. The next show that I'm going to be doing is Sunday, March 10th, Comic Verse, another Comic Verse event. This will be at Lucky Dogs with a Z in Neenah, Wisconsin. So I will be there. No Davids this time, but I will be bringing copies of their comic book, their Tales from the North. I had asked if they minded if I would bring some copies with me when I do my solo shows. He was all for it. I wasn't sure if they would want to, be there in person when doing that thing, but he was, very happy to send a couple off with me with some bagged with some sketch cards, so I could sell those individually too and help promote the Crimson Cowl Media brand. And then we will be back at Madison Mighty Con Sunday, May 5th. That is Free Comic Book Day weekend, so get all your free comic books and support your local comic book shop. And then if you're in the area, come on down to Mighty Con Madison, Sunday, May 5th. Go to mightyconshows.com for information. While you're on the internet, just keep going to websites by going crimsoncowl.com for information and original web comics. Go to Crimson Cowl Comic Club on iTunes to subscribe, rate, and review to the audio version. But if you want more than that, if you're just sick of just listening to the audio and you want to see some of these visuals, some of the things that we hold up on the camera and the covers and the everything that happens, then subscribe to us on YouTube, Crimson Cowl Comic Club on YouTube for the full video experience. The Crimson Cowl, all one word on Instagram, Crimson Cowl Comic Club at yahoo.com if you want to reach out to us. Kirby has a spin-off podcast called Under the Cowl of MS. Is there anything you want to promote that's been coming out or anything that's on deck for Under the Cowl of MS?
Speaking of Milwaukee Mighty Con, you can check out my purchases from Milwaukee Mighty Con on there, and I'll be having a lot of individual reviews and stuff from all the different special creators that I came across this year. There was awesome. This was one of my favorite ones this year. I met a lot of new creators in
Nice.
this one. And then I've been putting out some more single reviews on Instagram, and doing the other comic book reviews and stuff are still going good. But yeah, check those out, including one that has the geriatric gangrene gerbil one out there on Instagram. But lots of fun stuff I've been picking up.
There you go. So follow Under the Cowl of MS over on Instagram, wherever you get your audio podcast, as well as YouTube. And I have some art accounts over on Facebook and Instagram, Anthony Latch, LAATSCH. Give my accounts a follow. I post almost daily. I've got so much stuff that I have weeks worth of stuff to post, and it gets more exciting every time. I also host Cartoonist by Night over on YouTube alongside Troy Dungera, as well as Matt Rogers and Matt Fife, and a frequent guest, which is D. Brad Gibson. So a bunch of cartoonists hanging out, drawing and talking. We had our Brian Lynch Muppets episode where he's talking about everything about the Muppets, as well as the Hot Wing of Justice, who is a former guest on this very podcast. So check out the back video feeds. You won't find that on, I don't think it's on the audio feeds anymore. Those get kind of, there's only so much you can hold on the audio feed, but jump over to the video and you can see that with Brian Lynch, as well as a drawing video on Cartoonist by Night. We have another episode in the can that will be out right around the time that you are listening or watching to this. But we invited Eric Wolfgang, who is the artist of Super Fun Altogether, the book that I reviewed here on this show a couple weeks back, maybe a month back at this time. But he hangs out with us. He is a Chicago-based cartoonist, relocated to Florida. He has tons of awesome stories. We finally had a guest on the show that will talk more than I do, so I get to just kind of take a back seat and I just get to draw and just listen and hear awesome stories. He kept apologizing beforehand. He's like, if you mention anything, I'll talk about an hour for it. Like whether it's just like a bottle talk about a bottle cap, you'll talk about an hour, about a bottle cap. And I'm just like, hey, that's awesome, because I just I get to relax a little bit and save my breath. He's gonna probably do the plugs version of this podcast, because I always run out of breath. So maybe I'll have Eric Wolfgang do that. But no, Eric Wolfgang, awesome artist. I show off tons of examples of his work, from original art to the comic book work. A lot of awesome stuff from Eric Wolfgang. So that'll be a future episode of Cartoonist by Night, already in the can, needs to be edited. All right, that is gonna do it then for this episode. Thank you all for watching. We appreciate it. Give some likes and some follows and some shares and tell a friend about it. We have a lot of stuff going on, Crimson Cowl Media and everything related to it. This whole time, it's been Morphin time.
I've been hanging with ghosts, ducks, vampires, and a two-headed wolf.
And I'm busy doing nothing.
To be continued.
Shoot your eye out. You'll shoot your eye out.
Yes, Nanny.
I am bullet.
Well, that's not ketchup.
Thank you, Slimer.